Marshall, whenever you're ready, you can proceed.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Gaitas, Judge Peterson, the Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. Today is February 11th, 2021. We have five cases on our calendar today. We will be hearing the first two. We'll have oral arguments in the first two. The oral cases are being heard on the Zoom platform in accordance with pandemic-related court orders. The same procedural requirements apply to our Zoom oral arguments as apply to our in-person oral arguments. Each party will have 15 minutes for their primary argument, and appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Marshall will be keeping the time, and you can see in one of the squares or rectangles on the grid view, there is a clock there. If there's any technical difficulties, I'll ask the marshal to stop the clock just to make sure you receive your full allotment of time, but we don't expect there will be any difficulties. This oral argument is being recorded by the Court of Appeals. Any other recordings of the argument are prohibited except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. I will ask counsel to identify yourself and the party you represent when you proceed. The first case on our calendar today is A20-1219, Tundi Oni versus Target Corporation. Appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Daniel Gray Leland, L-E-L-A-N-D. I represent the appellant, Mr. Tundi Oni, in this case. Tundi Oni lost his job because he tested positive for having a blood alcohol content that was one-third of his employer's definition of being under the influence of alcohol. Minnesota has a law that directly and in great detail addresses employee and drug alcohol testing. It is DATWA, the Drug and Alcohol Testing in the Workplace Act. It is a statute that is one of, if not the most, protective employment laws in the state of Minnesota. The respondent violated that law. Appellant's argument boils down to functionally two simple points. First, DATWA requires a checklist, basically a checklist of information that must be provided in an employer's testing policy in order for any test to be lawful. That checklist is provided in statute, Minnesota Statute Section 181.952, Subdivision 1. The respondent's argument is that does not actually need to provide employees with an accurate statement of that checklist. Secondly, DATWA requires an employer to follow its own testing policy. If it doesn't follow that testing policy, the test is illegal. Minnesota Statute Section 181.951, Subdivision 1, states that an employer must have a written policy and must follow its written testing policy. Here, however, the respondent argues that does not need to follow its own written testing policy. I think what is important for this court to bear in mind is that drug and alcohol testing in the workplace is the exception to the general rule that prohibits these type of tests. Very simply, Minnesota Statute Section 181.951, Subdivision 1B, states that an employer may not request or require an employee or job applicant to undergo drug or alcohol testing unless very specific requirements are met.
And which requirement wasn't met here?
Certainly, Your Honor. I think it boils down to two main issues. The first, the requirement that was not met is that their statement of policy did not provide an accurate and truthful disclosure of the limitations under DATWA. Secondly, the testing was unlawful because they did not follow their own policy.
Mr. Leland, following up on Judge Peterson's question, your appeal only involves count one of your complaint. Is that correct?
Correct.
And in looking at the complaint, I don't see any reference to statute 181.952 subdivision one that you referenced as requiring the list of information, the checklist of information that needs to be included. It appears to me that count one is really focused on firing of Mr. Oney based on alleging that he was improperly fired in, or he was fired in a manner that didn't comply with Target's own policy because his blood alcohol concentration was less than 0.04. I don't see any allegation that the firing violated DATWA based on failing to include the checklist information required under 952.
Certainly, Your Honor. And the issue is, the question is whether or not they comply with the statute before they tested Mr. Oney. That's never been an issue in dispute. That is not an issue that has been raised previously. The question is, not did they comply with the statute?
But don't you have to allege the specific violation in your complaint in order to prevail on summary judgment?
I would submit to the court that the specific violation is a violation of DATWA.
And what violation is that?
Again, Judge, what I will say is that the violation is that they did not they were not allowed to conduct any sort of testing. The reason why they're not allowed to conduct any sort of testing is set forth very plainly under Minnesota Statutes 181.951. In order to conduct any test, for any test to be lawful, it has to meet two basic requirements. One is that they hit the checklist of things in 181.952. Secondly, that they follow their own policy. So the allegation of what they did not comply with is set forth very plainly in 181.951. Got to follow your policy. Have to have a written policy. Your written policy has to say 1 through 6. And you have to, and the employer has to follow its own written policy.
So
where does I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Peterson. Go ahead.
How does, when you say they have to follow their own policy, you're talking about in terms of discipline, is that correct?
No, Your Honor. I think it applies to the entire situation. The entire situation is that they have to follow their written policy. Otherwise, they are not allowed to do any sort of testing at all. Whether it applies to discipline or whether it applies to something else, it may.
Well, going back to the complaint, it appears that the only allegation was they failed to follow their policy in terms of the discipline that was imposed. And it's not clear to me how statute 181.951 subdivision 1B implicates discipline in any manner. It appears to address testing, not discipline.
Certainly, Your Honor. And what I would first like to point out is that count one specifically states that it is a claim for failure to test in accordance with statute. I'm turning specifically about subdivision 181.951 subdivision one. It states that an employer cannot conduct any testing unless it meets the requirements of the statute. The requirements of the statute are set forth in 181.952, subdivision one.
And I still don't understand, which provision in the statute do you say was not followed?
What I am saying, Your Honor, is that they were not allowed to conduct any sort of testing at all whatsoever because their policy did not comply with the requirements of the law.
Right, and I'm trying to find out which requirement of the law did it not comply with.
Certainly. One specific thing and most directly applicable here is that it did not discuss, the policy did not state the appropriate, it did not state accurate, it did not prevent accurate recitation of the disciplinary or other adverse personnel action that could be take could be taken based upon a positive test.
So which provision in the law did that violate?
181.952, subdivision 1.4.
Which says?
It says that the content of a written policy must state any disciplinary or other adverse personnel action that may be taken based upon a confirmatory test, verifying a positive test result on initial screening test.
But didn't their policy say that a positive test could lead to discipline up to discharge?
No, what their policy stated was that it can lead up to discharge within the sole discretion of target corporation. That's not what DATWA says. DATWA does not leave it within the sole discretion of the employer in terms of what action they will take in the result of a first time positive. I mean, that's not what DATWA requires. It requires exactly to the opposite, 181.953, subdivision 10. For an employer to say, well, this is what our policy states. It says we can fire anyone on a first time positive. That is a misrepresentation of the law. For Target to say that to its employees is inaccurate.
The purpose so Leland, of the- where what language are you referring to when you say that the policy says it can fire anyone for a first time positive?
Certainly. I believe it is index 20, I think number 2. It's the Minnesota Distribution Center Drug-Free Workplace Policy, if I don't have that cite correct. It is 2 pages long. The second page says consequences for policy violations. It's a header. It says team members who violate any of the above listed policy prohibitions are subject to discipline up to including termination at Target's sole discretion. Target reserves the right to refer team members who test positive for drugs and or alcohol the first time to a chemical dependency evaluation or treatment program. That's not what DATWA requires. That's contrary to DATWA. I believe is also set forth in our brief that Target's own interpretation of its policy is that it can fire employees based upon a first time positive.
And the firing that actually occurred here, correct me if I'm wrong, but the facts were that the test results came back. There was a request that he go into some sort of treatment or whatever the I'm not exactly sure what the program would be. And when he refused to do that, he was fired. So is what actually happened here a violation of the statute? I mean, in the firing process itself?
In the firing process itself? I mean, the fundamental issue is that he could not have been lawfully tested in the first instance.
Well, I'm just trying to find out what actually happened here seems to me is consistent with what's permitted under the statute, unless you're correct that he had to have full explanation in the Target policy of what the law required.
Well, Judge, I think that's a very interesting gloss, but the fact of the matter is most employers actually do have policies that comply with the law.
Right, but I'm trying to find it. Seems to me that what your claim here is that the statute was violated because of the limited nature of Target's policy. It didn't fully explain to its employees what the law required.
No, I would disagree with you on two different points. The first point being, their policy says under the influence of alcohol is 0.04. Mr. Oney was a third of that. He was 0.014. Target says it's not going to take disciplinary action unless someone hits that 0.04 threshold. He didn't. Okay, so the termination of Mr. Oney's employment violated their own policy. It wasn't done pursuant to the policy. I think, secondly, the issue is fundamentally whether or not employers are allowed to test employees under the DATWA statute. DATWA sets forth pretty specific requirements. If they don't hit those requirements, they can't test someone. Therefore, any test that follows from that is illegal.
And is one of the requirements that they be fully informed about what the law says?
Your Honor, I'm not saying that they should be fully informed what the law says. I am saying that Target should not be able to misrepresent information to its employees. I think if we look at the recent Minnesota Supreme Court case of Hall v. City of Lakeview, it stands for that exact proposition. An employer can't use a policy to mislead its employees. The question before, I think, the Minnesota Supreme Court in the Hall case was, what is the interpretation that an ordinary Minnesota employee is going to take from looking at this policy? What Target says is, Target's DFW policy, simply stated, is to become or remain a Target team member. A person may not, while in Target time or premises, use, sell, buy, solicit, possess, or distribute alcohol or drugs, or have present in their body alcohol above a certain level, or drugs. The policy then goes on to define what under the influence means. And it says that it is a blood alcohol content that exceeds 0.04%. I think if there's any lesson to be learned from the Minnesota Supreme Court case that was just issued 8 days ago, is that what we need to consider are how is the I won't find the exact language, but what would an ordinary Minnesota employee understand that to mean? An ordinary Minnesota employee would trust that their employer would not breach its own policy, that an employer would not hold Mr. Oney responsible for their policy, but they didn't have to do the same thing on their end. I see that my time is running up. I will therefore wait until my opportunity for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leland. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The district court's summary judgment order in this matter should be affirmed for five simple reasons.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt. Can you please introduce yourself and the
party you represent? My apologies. My name is Katie Connolly. I'm with the law firm of Nyland Johnson Lewis in Minneapolis, and I represent Target Corporation.
Thank you.
Mr. Oney cannot appeal that which he neither presented to the district court at summary judgment nor pled in his complaint. Appellant raises two arguments in his appeal relating to arguments he never presented to the district court related to the doctrine of contra proferentum in the context of adhesion contracts and a section 181.953 termination requirements. Which was not pled in the complaint in count one. Mr. Oney apparently concedes these points because he did not address them in his reply. Regardless, Target's DFW policy complies with the DATWA, and Target's termination of Mr. Oney was lawful. As we have been discussing already this morning, the section 181.951 claim is based on subdivision 1B. And subdivision 1B requires that an employer have a policy setting forth the minimum requirements of 181.952 prior to testing. This is a pre-testing requirement. And the notice requirements in 181.952 are one, that the employer notify the employees of the individuals who are subject to the policy. Check. Target's DFW policy does this. The second is the circumstances under which testing may be requested. Check. The DFW policy does this. The third is the right of an employee to refuse to undergo testing and the consequences of doing so. Check. The DFW policy does this. The fourth is any disciplinary or other adverse action that may be taken based on a confirmatory retest verifying a positive test result on an initial test. And that is the point that I think the appellant misunderstands. The requirement under this section does not require that you spell out all of the possibilities under section 181.953. Rather, the language of subdivision 4 within 181.952 subdivision 1 clearly states any disciplinary or other adverse personal action that may be taken. Check. Target's DFW policy does this. The policy does not say, as the appellant has suggested, that the policy does not say, as appellant has suggested, that Target will fire a first-time positive tester under any circumstances. That's simply not what the policy says. The appellant has accused the district court of rewriting the policy. I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo. Instead, it's the, are you able to hear me now? Instead, it's the appellant who is rewriting the policy. The policy clearly states that team members who violate any of the above listed policy prohibitions are subject to discipline, up to and including termination. This sentence does not say, nor do any of the sentences before or following it, say that Target will fire a first-time offender regardless of the circumstances. And in fact, the consequences for policy violation section language goes on to state exactly what appellant complains that the policy does not state. In other words, that section goes on to say, Target may offer you the opportunity to participate in a rehabilitation program. Why does Target not say that it will do that? Because Target doesn't have to offer the right to participate in a rehabilitation program under DATWA unless it's going to possibly terminate that employee. So if Target decides, based on a first-time positive, that it's not going to terminate the person, it doesn't have to offer the right to participate in a rehabilitation program. So that's why Target's policy does not mandate that Target will take that action, because what the policy allows Target to do is to, within its discretion, determine what discipline may be appropriate based on a violation of the policy. And that is all.
Ms. Conley, would you agree, though, that the policy isn't as clear as it could be in terms of the requirements of Section 181.953 subdivision 10 that clearly says you can't discharge an employee with a first time positive unless the employer has first given the employee the opportunity to participate in either counseling or a rehabilitation program?
Your Honor, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I think the final sentence of the consequences for policy violations addresses the concern that you've just raised. That final sentence says, team members who refuse to participate in an evaluation or treatment program, fail to successfully complete a treatment program, fail to abide by the terms of the rehabilitation / return to work agreement, or test positive for drugs or alcohol a second time, are subject to discipline up to and including immediate termination. So it's that final sentence of the policy that addresses the 181.953 requirement that an employee cannot be terminated based on a first-time positive without first being offered that opportunity to participate. So that final sentence clarifies that should you be offered that opportunity and refuse to participate, that could lead to termination, or as it is otherwise spelled out in 181.953, the other circumstances of non-compliance. For example, you don't successfully complete it, you don't agree to the terms of a rehabilitation or return to work agreement, or you have a second time positive. Those are all elements that are spelled out in 181.953. So that final sentence, it addresses the 181.953 concern.
Is the facial challenge argument even properly before us? Was that actually raised by appellant's complaint, or is that issue waived?
Yes, Your Honor, that is an issue that is waived. The facial challenge to the statute was not raised except on appeal. And as the Supreme Court stated in the matter of Copeland, DATWA should be interpreted according to its terms, so suggesting strongly that there is no facial ambiguity here. And the argument that there is a facial ambiguity simply doesn't pass muster here. The statute that is at issue in this appeal, or the subdivision at issue in this appeal, is subdivision one, which states, subdivision 1B, which states you can't test someone unless you have a written policy that meets the minimum requirements of subdivision one, which lists out the six requirements that you have to include in your notice. So there, I fail to see, and I don't believe that appellant has sufficiently demonstrated where the facial ambiguity in these provisions lies, even if he had raised it appropriately, which he did not. The other issues that the section 181.952 requires also were met by Target's DFW policy. It requires that the notice include information regarding an employee's right to explain a positive test result on a confirmatory test and the right to request a confirmatory retest. Check, the DFW policy does this. And then finally, it requires that the policy include any other appeal procedures available. Check, the DFW policy does this. As your honors noted, Mr. Oni does not actually claim that Target's DFW policy doesn't do each of these things. Rather, he thinks Target should have done more, but that is not a claim that lies under this section of DATWA. The district court's order should also be affirmed because Mr. Oni's argument regarding section 181.953 subdivision 10 also fails. And this is the discretionary language that we were just discussing. It requires that employees be notified of, the DATWA doesn't require notice of that, but what Target's policy does is say, we might terminate you, we might take other discipline, we might offer you the opportunity to participate in a rehabilitation program, and if we do offer you that right and you refuse, you might be terminated. That complies with section 181.953 subdivision 10. The district court's order should also be affirmed because Mr. Oni's argument regarding section 181.952 subdivision 1.4 also fails. And this is part and parcel of everything that we've already been discussing. But the subdivision 4 subdivision 1.4 of section 181.952 simply requires that Target identify any disciplinary or other adverse personnel action that may be taken based on a confirmatory retest.
Are you suggesting that Target's policy need not be consistent with the requirements of DATWA in terms of the disciplinary action that it can take?
I am certainly
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I am not suggesting that Target's policy need not be consistent with what DATWA allows. What I am saying is that that's not an issue on this appeal. And it's not an issue even if it was an issue on appeal, because Target's policy does comply with what DATWA says is limited in terms of an employer's ability to terminate if a confirmatory test on an initial positive test is conducted, which in this case, of course, it was, and that is not at issue. Mr. Oni doesn't dispute that the test result at issue was a positive test result on a confirmatory retest, and that he did not himself request, nor did anyone on his behalf request, a second confirmatory retest, even though he had plainly been advised of that right. The policy argument, I think, that goes to the point that you were just making, Judge Cochran, that appellant has raised is a red herring. The appellant in his reply brief identified a parade of horribles, but the appellant is tilting at windmills, Your Honors, because all of the circumstances that he identified in his reply, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen if the court doesn't reverse the district court's determination on summary judgment, those simply are not at issue here. The count that was pled was that Target's policy doesn't comply with 181.951 subdivision 1, which merely requires that Target have a policy that sets forth the minimum requirements of section 181.952 subdivision 1. Target's policy indisputably met those requirements. It doesn't, as appellant suggests, also say that that Target will fire you for no reason at all, because it thinks that you're a drug dealer. Target's policy in no way, shape, or form even comes close to the parade of horribles that appellant suggests in his reply.
Ms. Conley, you only have a little less than 2 minutes left, so I'd like to direct you to appellant's first argument in his brief regarding the Target's policy, Target's own policy, and the prohibition on working at Target while under the influence, and also providing that Target may take discipline if a employee is under the influence or tests positive for drugs or alcohol. And under the influence is defined as having a blood alcohol content of 0.04 or greater. What is the purpose of defining under the influence of 0.04 or greater if a positive test of less than 0.04 can result in discipline? Why appellant argues that language under the influence is basically rendered meaningless. Can you please address that argument?
I can, Your Honor. First, I this is not an issue subject to the parameters of section 181.951, which is the claim that appellant has appealed. But second, these are alternative propositions. Target says you can't be drunk at work, but you also can't be almost drunk at work. And that's the distinction. So Target is saying we don't want you to be impaired, but we also don't want you to be subject to the effects of alcohol that would be present based on a positive result.
But you're only impaired if you're 0.04 or greater. And the only way you can know that is by testing. So I guess it's not clear to me why you would define it as above a certain level if any level is a concern to Target.
The point is well taken, Your Honor. The issue is that the policy plainly sets forth that you are not able to test positive at work. And that is clear. It is an or proposition. Whether or not Target's policy would have been sufficient simply by stopping at the or is not an appropriate claim under 181.951. But either way, it's an or proposition. It stated clearly the factors that would lead to a test and which could result in termination. And that was whether or not you tested positive for alcohol. And Mr. Oney did so in this matter. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'll just remind counsel to please leave your video on even if you're not arguing. Mr. Leland, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Apologies, Your Honor. Once again, Daniel Leland, on behalf of the appellant. There was a lot there to unpack. I think the easiest place to start is the argument that, well, appellant talks about this parade of horribles that could potentially, you know, unfold, and none of those apply. I want to remind the court that Target's policy says that you're under the influence of alcohol, that you have alcohol present in your system if you have a 0.04% blood alcohol content or greater. Mr. Oney's blood alcohol content was a third of that. We don't need to go into a parade of horribles. We can see exactly what happened right here in this case. Target said, this is what we expect you to do. We're going to hold you to this responsibility. Mr. Oney did that, and yet he was still fired. And the reasons, the justifications for this require Target's legal counsel to go out and attempt to find nuance in a policy that Target itself wrote was simply stated that you cannot have a blood alcohol or you cannot have alcohol above a certain level in some when you report to work.
But Target could have a policy, couldn't it, that if you have any alcohol in your system, you could get fired? Or is that prohibited?
I think that would be illegal, yes.
So the real question here is the confusion caused by adding this standard for being under the influence.
I don't think it's necessarily an issue of confusion. I think it's what was reported to the employer in terms of what Target said they're going to follow through on, what their standards are. They provided notice of what their standards are, how you can, how an employee can have their behavior to conform to that standard. And Mr. Oney did that. And yet here we are, and he got fired. And, you know, Target's counsel is spending ad infinitum trying to find some sort of nuance in a policy to say, well, it applies to every single possible positive. That's not what their simply stated their policy is. That's not what it says. And if you're going to represent to an employee, this is their simple statement of policy, then abide by it. I think when we look particularly at, you know, again, this case is relatively new, but the Hall v. City of Lakeview case was only issued 8 days ago by the Minnesota Supreme Court. But, you know, it's a different issue, but I think the main takeaways are important here. And that is, if an employer is going to make representations to an employee, be honest about it. And an employee should be able to, you know, the interpretation of a policy should be, you know, based upon what that decision said was what an ordinary Minnesota employee would interpret from reading that language. And we already know what that is. Target said, this is their policy, simply stated. Mr. Oney followed through on his end of the bargain. Target did not. And so doing, it did not comply with DATWA because it did not follow its own policy, which is required under Minnesota Statutes 181.951.
Where does DATWA, can you point us to the language that you're referring to when you say DATWA requires Target to follow its own policy in terms of discipline?
Sure, 181.951. Says that an employer may not request or require an employee or job applicant to undergo drug and alcohol testing except authorized in this section. It then says that any employer may not require an employee or job applicant to undergo drug or alcohol testing unless testing is done pursuant to a written drug and alcohol testing policy.
But what's at issue, what you're concerned about was the discipline that took place after the testing. And so at the time they requested him to undergo testing, that discipline hadn't yet occurred. So I'm having trouble seeing how discipline that occurs after testing can be a violation of a provision that talks about when an employer may or may not require an employee to undergo testing.
Certainly,
Your Honor. Can you help me with that?
Certainly, I would go so far as to suggest that when the statute says that the testing must be done pursuant to a policy, that the policy must comply with the law.
Okay. Well, your time is up. Any further questions from the panel?
Nope.
Well, we appreciate the arguments from both counsel and your briefing as well. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.